Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
I just want to flag with you that this first conversation today contains references to sexual assault and rape. I know it could be distressing for some listeners and particularly little ears. So just to flag that at the outset, Sophia Murphy is with me on the programme this afternoon, and Sophia was just an infant when her father started abusing her. John Murphy, a former member of the Defence Forces and formerly of Neffinview Manor in Foxford in County Mayo, was sentenced to 18 years for indecent assault, sexual assault and rape back in 2018. It's now nearly 5 months, though, since Sophia's mother, Jacqueline Curran, was sent to prison for failing to act to protect her from that abuse. She was sentenced to 18 months after pleading guilty to 2 counts of child cruelty for willfully failing to protect her daughter. And Sophia Murphy joins me on the line today from Thailand, where she's now living. Sophia, thank you so much for joining us on the programme. It's nearly 5 months since your mother was sentenced. How are you now feeling?
To be honest, my feelings and emotions are like all over the place, because like it's still hard to get my head around and to comprehend like that both of my parents are in prison for abusing me as a kid. It's like, it's mad, because like there's so many parts of me that become present every day, like little me, the teenager in me. And yeah, it's just my feelings and emotions are a bit scattered.
Which is completely understandable, Sophia, given what you've gone through. In as much as you feel comfortable sharing with us and with listeners here today on the programme, can you bring us back and tell us maybe a little bit about your earliest memories of when this first started?
I can, Andrea. My earliest memory was when I was 3. It's the most vivid memory. But since then, I've had like bits and bobs. And obviously, since the restorative justice, my father has told me more. And I've had like, I remember it in my body, but not visually, if that makes sense. But my first visual memory is sitting on the bus as a 3-year-old. I'll never forget like my little black patent shoes and my ankle socks, and my father was abusing me. There was guys outside the bus, and all that was going through my head is they're going to see him. And I just like, my whole life, like I carried that fear. Like my whole life I lived in survival mode, and it's like the abuse was constant, Andrea. Like I've said it many times, like there wasn't a day that I wasn't around my father where there wasn't a touch or verbal abuse or physical abuse or sexual abuse. There was some form of abuse, and like my mother ignored it all. And like, obviously she admitted now that she knew stuff was going on, and I always knew she knew. Do you know what I mean? You don't ask your 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, has your father been touching you? And do you know what I mean? It's not a standard question to ask in any household. Like, do you know, it's,
yeah. And this went on daily, did it?
It was, as I said, it was like there was either sexual, physical, verbal. Like my dad was horrendous. He was a bully, but he was fun. It's hard to explain him. Like my mom was very, like, she was absent. She spent a lot of her time hiding out in the room. She was like, I look back now, she was very depressed, and like he took advantage of that. And he was like, he was the fun parent. Without him, we kind of had nothing, do you know, that sort of way. And he knew, I used to like almost feel sorry for him because he was sick a bit as well. And I look back now and I think, oh my God, like you played us all off each other in that house. Like, you're such a smart, intelligent man. You're not the vulnerable, silly, sick man I thought you were. Like, you're a sick man to a degree, yes, but you're very, very intelligent. Very intelligent.
And the exterior that people would have known about your father, how was John Murphy perceived by those who knew him, Sophia?
Oh, God. That, like, a lot of people thought he was like, he acted the clown, he was silly. But a lot of my friends, when I became a teenager, a lot of my friends were calling him a pervert and stuff like that. Like, our friends, my sister's friends, my friends would come to the house and they'd be going up the stairs, he'd try and grab them and stuff like that. And there was a few neighbours that told me that they seen stuff when I was a baby, and it started coming out then when I reported it at 14. And then we moved to Mayo from Galway, so obviously people were putting two and two together and, yeah, seeing what was going on.
It sounds like you knew from the very nearly your, you know, from your kind of first memories, Sophia, it sounds like you knew all along that this just wasn't right. There's something wrong here.
Oh, I knew because, like, my body knew, like, every part of me knew, because, like, I shouldn't have been the one trying to protect him. Like, there's no 3-year-old should be the one trying to protect their parents. You know, it's like I said to my counsellor one day, I don't remember a day where I had a child brained. You know, I always felt like I've had a responsibility for somebody or something.
When did you decide to first report this?
Whatever about what he'd done to me, like, that was grand. I had lived that, to me, that was my normal. But then, like, when he'd done it to people I loved, to my sisters, I ran away at 16 and he promised me, like, that I rang him from England and, like, I had a few drinks on me, you get brave with alcohol, and I was like, attacked him on the phone. He was like, oh, I've never done it to anyone else, I'd never do it to anyone else, and I believed him, do you know? And then all this came out and I was like, oh my god. And, like, when I'd done the restorative justice, Andrea, he even said to me, like, that he was glad that I got him locked up because he could have done something to our children, do you know? It's like, oh my god, like, it's crazy.
So just to bring me back there for a moment, you mentioned Steph, Sophia, and Steph is your late sister, is that right?
Yeah. Steph passed away nearly 5 years ago. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Yeah, life got really really, really hard for Steph. She had her own issues with alcohol and stuff like that, and her mental health, like, she couldn't handle it anymore, Andrea. It was way too much for her, like, and she suffered so much with, like, Guillain-Barré syndrome, like, every autoimmune disease that she could get, she was getting it, like, her body just gave up on her.
So Steph had medical issues, did she?
She had liver failure in the end and a brain hemorrhage.
Okay, she just had a really poor run of medical concerns that happened. Are you the eldest, Sophia?
Yeah, I was the eldest, nearly 4 years between me and Steph.
Were you close?
Oh, yeah, like, we were, because when we were kids, like, as mad and all as it, like, even I didn't know what was going on with her, but we understood each other. Like, Steph is actually adopted, and I do say sometimes, like, it's mad how she's adopted and we're so close. And, like, when Steph passed away, Andrea, it was like, the only other person in the world that understood me was gone, do you know, that sort of way. But I look at it now, like, Steph's death saved my life, and Steph's birth also saved my life, because, like, I was 13 when my younger sister came along, my birth sister, and if I didn't have Steph in my life, I don't know what way my life would have been. And if Steph didn't die, I wouldn't have went into recovery, do you know? So, like, her birth and her death saved me in so many ways. It's mad.
Like, so Steph obviously at some point recognised and spoke to you, Sophia, about the abuse and
the
home.
It's when
she
yeah, it's when the other relative reported it. I went to Steph and I said it to Steph about me, and I said I was going to the guards, and then she said, Sophia, Dad done it to me as well.
And that's when you decided enough was enough.
Enough was enough. And then it turned out there was more victims. There was 5 altogether that we know about. 6 altogether, sorry, that he's been sentenced for.
So you went to the guards to report this. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience, Sophia?
Yeah, I was blessed. Like, I was really, really blessed with the guard that was over the case, Garda Thomasina McHale. She was amazing. I was 2 weeks in giving statements. Like, there was days, there was 10-hour days in there. Like, it went on forever. I looking back at it now, I really was dissociated from a lot of it. And, like, even thinking when Thomasina would be asking me questions, and I'd be saying, when he'd touch you, and Thomasina would be like, no, you have to say I, you know, because she's writing a statement, like, and stuff like that. And I used to cringe. I used to find it so hard to say mine or I, you know. I always spoke about myself as a third person, that I found that really, really, really challenging. That's after I gave the statements to Dad, I ended up in hospital for a week. I just had a mental breakdown. My daughter had to ring an ambulance for me. The statements was like, oh, they were they were pretty like horrible on the body, the mind, just the whole life in general. I really went downhill with addiction after that. Like, I just spiraled out of control after that because.
At what age were you? Sorry, Sophia, to cut across you. Just at what age were you roughly when you talked about, you know, running away from home and kind of obviously trying to cope with everything that happened and, you know, an addiction? What age roughly were you around that period?
Oh, I started using alcohol and substances when I was just a kid. I my first drink and cigarette around 9, and I started working then when I was 12. And once I started getting money, it was bottles of Bugfast and ecstasy pills at 12 years of age and hash and just, yeah. Like, my drinking was atrocious when I was a teenager. Like, I used to go into the shops and rob bottles of peach snaps and anything I could get my hands on. I just, anything to stay away from home.
My God. And this is all as a knock-on effect, Sophia, of what happened to you as a kid.
Yeah, like, even Steph was the same. Steph is drinking alcohol since she was 11, 12, I'd say. The same thing.
At what age did the abuse stop? Or did it ever stop?
When I ran away from home, I ran away to England with my daughter's dad, my partner at the time, at 16. And, like, the sexual, like, as I call it, abuse stopped, but the touching was always there. Do you know, that sort of way, like a pinch of a boob. I know I'm saying it like it sounds something like it's so minor, but it was minor.
Definitely not.
To what was. Yeah.
But it went on from 3 years of age to 16 when you had to run away from the house, Sophia.
Yeah, but anyway, when I was in doing the restorative justice with my father, he told me he was sexually abusing me since I was a couple of weeks old. Ooh. Sorry.
No, take your time, Sophie. I can't even begin to imagine what it must be like for you, you know, to have gone through everything you went through, and then, as I would see it, like, to have the bravery to be able to come out and talk about this so publicly is, you know, fair play to you, because it's absolutely unbelievable what you've gone through.
I had to speak about it, Andrea, because the frustration, even looking back at myself as a child, when I'd be screaming like silently into a pillow, and the frustration of not being able to talk. And when I seen how Steph suffered, she didn't do counselling like I did, or she found it very hard to talk about stuff. And the more I spoke, the more I healed. And I was like, this is powerful. Like, it wasn't just the version of me that I am now, even today, talking to you, speaking. It's the 41 years of me that's, every time I speak, it's a weight off my shoulders. It really is.
So you went to the guards. The guards were really helpful, which I always think, you know, it's great to hear that. And it's great you say that, Sophia, when that is your experience. Because I think for other people, I'm sure listening to you today, you know, that geez, have gone through something even a tenth of what you've experienced, that would take comfort, you know, from knowing that there was a friendly face at the other side of that desk in the Garda station to help and support them. And it's great to hear that that's the case. So your dad was obviously, he was arrested. You went through the courts, obviously.
Yeah. The sentencing was in 2000, I think it was 2017 or 2017, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I went in and out through the courts for the last 11 years, but Dad's went on for 4 to 5 years, and then my mother's 7.
And your dad is currently, John Murphy is serving, it was an 18-year sentence, wasn't it, that he received?
He received 18 for me.
And that was he was sentenced for indecent assault, sexual assault and for rape. Concurrent sentences for 18 years. So when you heard that sentence handed down, how were you feeling about that?
At the time, Andrea, I was like, he doesn't deserve that. That's like, that's where my head was at the time. I was, because he got the 10 years for the 3 girls, I was like, oh, he'll probably get 5 or something. And when I heard the word 18 life sentence, I was like, what? And then I was like, but it wasn't that bad. And then I was, even when he was being taken away that day, he was manipulating the life out of me. He was looking at me like with these little puppy dog eyes, you know, and it's like, he shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have tried to do that. I was feeling bad enough, you know, but I was very shocked. But now I look at it and think, you should have got a lot longer, because when I was in with him doing the restorative justice, I said to him, I said, like, as far as I'm concerned, in my eyes, you're a murderer, because if you didn't do what you done to Steph, she'd still be alive.
Tell me about the restorative justice. When that was first mentioned to you, how did you feel about that?
When it was first mentioned, I didn't really understand what it was, to be honest. Part of me probably was how will I explain it? Part of me was probably happy that I could actually speak to my father, but in a supervised way, you know, that sort of way, without me going for the meeting, because I felt like people would have judged me and stuff like that. And then when I spoke to Marie Keenan, oh my God, that woman is, wow, she's amazing. But when I spoke to her and she explained to me what it actually was, and then I was thinking, I could ask him that and I could ask him that. And it was like, I was like, wow, I actually have the power here.
And,
you know?
And maybe just to explain to listeners, was this is kind of where you have people that are wronged by a crime brought together in a sort of a safe space with the perpetrator. And basically, like, you get to ask the questions.
Yes, you get to sit there. You get to hold the space. I like. Don't get me wrong. It's not easy. It's there's a lot of preparation.
Very hard, that Sophia.
The first time it was very hard for me. I've done it twice. The first time I done it, it was very hard. I wasn't long in recovery. I was still very, very vulnerable. But the second time, when I had done a lot of work on myself just before I came over here, and I was like, no, I was ready for him the second time, because I knew the second time that was it, like that was me done, because of all the stuff that had come up and all the stuff that he told me. And it's a powerful space to have. It really is a powerful space to have, but it's hard.
Yeah. Can I ask you, after he was sentenced and went to prison and commenced serving his sentence, how was your relationship with your mother from that point?
Very toxic. My relationship with my mother has always been toxic, but like my mother was literally, she had us convinced to lie, you know, to try and, like, my mother had us petrified that our kids would be taken off us if we reported dad, like, to a point where when my father was staying in a place in Ballina while he was out in bail, my mother rang my sister Steph to say he was trying to cut him his private parts with a knife, and he tried to set himself on fire, just like really trying to play us off each other all the time. And then a few times I asked her, could we go for therapy, me, her and Steph and my younger sister, and she was like, well, I'm not sitting in a room to have someone tell me I'm this horrible person. And I was like, you know what, I just can't do this anymore. And then when we were given the statements about my dad, obviously a lot of stuff about my mother came up. So Thomasina said she put a file together, sent it to the DPP, and the DPP put a case against her. And yeah, it went from there.
And this was the accusation against her was that, I mean, she had failed to act to protect you from this abuse in the home as a child.
Yeah, she did. She failed to protect all of us as children. And like, we grew up in so much fear. Like she was a bully. Like we had no like normal love whatsoever, you know? And like, obviously she knew what my father was doing, so there was a lot of jealousy there as well. And it's just so complex, Andrea. It's like, oh, it's just something you wouldn't like to wish on anyone.
It's so hard to believe you've gone through all of this and got through all of this, Sophia, as well. You know, it's pretty incredible. I've no doubt for people listening today, they're just absolutely horrified by your story, but I'm sure so impressed with, you know, you and your ability to tell this story and how you've acted, you know, through all of this. How did your mother plead actually to that charge?
She pleaded not guilty the day I was supposed to go up on the stand. She dragged it through till the bitter end. Like, the sentencing was put back 3 times because she wanted extra reports and this and that. And she brought it up right to the bitter end. And then I can't remember the amount of charges, but she pleaded guilty to 2. She pleaded guilty to the first one and the last one. So she knew from the very beginning and she knew in the very end. So obviously she knew all in between as well.
Yeah, she was jailed for 18 months, isn't that right? She'd pleaded guilty to 2 counts of child cruelty for willfully failing to protect her daughter. She'd initially denied 32 charges connected to the prolonged sexual assault and rape carried out over a 13-year period. What was her reaction in court when she got 18 months?
I wasn't there. I was there through video link, but my daughter was there, and my daughter said she just kept her head down. She said she didn't show any emotion at all, but that's the way she was through every court case, you know, so I wasn't really surprised. She showed no emotion at any point whatsoever.
Have you spoken to her since, Sophia?
No. No, and to be honest, I actually said to Peter the last day, like, restorative justice would be a thing with my mom, because it doesn't have to be done in the prison system. Do you know, it can be done after, because like a year and a half isn't long enough. She needs a lot longer to accept, and if she's willing to work on herself before it becomes a thing. But I couldn't see that happen, because it's, and I'm, as mad and all as it sounds, I haven't seen this woman in years, but there's still a part of me that's afraid of her.
Because of everything that happened.
Yeah, and it's like when I seen her even in court, my heart started racing, and there was part of me that was scared, and there was part of me that felt bad for her, and just so, yeah. So,
you mentioned Peter. You're talking, yeah. Peter's your partner.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, and you're talking to us today here on Lunchtime Live from Thailand.
I am, yeah. And it's about 39 degrees roasting.
When did you move there, Sophia?
We came over to Bali on the 23rd of December, and we came to Thailand in February. We went back to Bali for a few weeks, and we're back in Thailand again, and we're going to get an education visas for a year. But I have, like, I've been looking into things lately, and I think my occupation and my location is going to change a little bit. I've started looking into working with children going forward and stuff. Like, I love recovery coaching. Recovery saved my life, and it'll always be a big part of my life. But every time I look back, because I always say I want to be the person that I needed, and every time I look back, that version of me that needed someone the most was the little child. So that's really pushing me to work with children. So we'll see where it goes. It's a dream, but we'll see.
it's great, and it's brilliant that, you know, you've obviously a good support network around you, which is brilliant to hear. And you mentioned your daughter as well. Where is she?
Oh, she's back in Ireland. She was over here for a month in March, and she's hoping to come back out again at the end of September for another month. So yeah, she's happy out back home in Mayo. She's living with her cousins and her housemates, and yeah, she's having a good life.
She's probably enjoying the post All Ireland celebrations. I'm sure she's
I don't think she's enjoying it too much now. I think the headache is still there, but she did enjoy it.
Good, yeah. And why wouldn't she? It's great to hear.
Yeah.
I just, maybe on a final point, Sophia, to ask you today, you know, I'm like thinking of people listening to you this afternoon, and I'm sure they're, you know, just heartbroken for you and listening to your story, because it's incredibly emotional to hear you share everything and the details of what you've gone through. But for somebody that has maybe experienced any element of what you have, you know, going through the court's process and actually watching justice be carried out, what words of encouragement would you have for somebody to come forward and report whatever they've experienced?
Please be kind to yourself. And like, I am living proof that no matter what you go through, if you believe in yourself enough and you know that everything that you've been through, it's not your fault, you're not to blame, when you become aware of that and just keep pushing through and believe in yourself and do it. Do it for the victim in you and do it for the survivor in you, because it's so worth it. It's so worth it. And you need to get it out, because it kills you. If you bury something like that inside, it eats you up inside. I know it does. I watched it happen to someone I love.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Sophia, to chat to you today. And I really, really wish you the very best of luck for everything in the future, because, you know, my God, it's an incredible childhood and experience you've had. But to be able to do a 360 and turn all of that around, you know, and join us today, it's such a pleasure to chat to you.
Thank you so much, Andrea. And as I said, thank you for giving me the space to share. And I hope it just helps one person.
Well, I know many listeners are distressed after hearing Sophia's story. This texter just getting in touch of one of many, I should say, you know, the lump in my throat and a knot in my stomach listening to Sophia this afternoon, who's survived the most horrific abuse by those supposed to protect her. Just such an amazing woman, and fair play to her for speaking about her story. The helpline number for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre is 1800 77 88 88. It's difficult to know what to say. You know, I'm blown away by Sophia's strength, like to be able to speak and speak so eloquently after everything she's gone through in her life, involving both of her parents, and even to be able to talk about it at all, is just extraordinary. Like, I've spent years talking to incredibly brave victims of sexual abuse, neglect, rape, and each of them leaves a mark. You know, there's something in particular about Sophia's story, I think, that has really, really struck me and really, I think, kind of impacted a lot of listeners from the messages coming in. Like, they're her own memories of the abuse. But to learn then through a restorative justice program that her father was abusing her before she could even form memory, and that her mother's denial of what was going on, you know, it's a story that leaves a mark. And making the decision to waive her right to anonymity, to tell the country about what happened to her in an effort really to kind of help other people, it's not an easy decision to make. I think she's probably done a great service, actually, speaking out this afternoon and encouraging others who've gone through anything remotely similar, you know, not to be afraid to speak out and to seek justice. The helpline again for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre is 1800 77 8888. If you want to share your own story with us, you can drop us an email. It's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.